Amen.
Recording in progress.
The lady has sung, and the game can begin. You don't know what that means, but anyone who grew up in Brooklyn, this is not recording. Yomo, this remains red. It should be blue. I charged it. But you're connecting it. I see what you're doing. And it's recording there? Okay. This is recording, and I guess Jack is recording. If you grew up in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Dodgers was around the corner from where Chabad is today. And there was a fat lady who sang the Star Spangled Banner. When she finished singing, the game could begin. So for anyone who grew up in Brooklyn, that's an expression. The fat lady has sung, the shiur can begin. Okay, it's Monday, September 19th, 2022. And I just want to mention, in relation to yesterday's shiur, Yomo tells me I was right. What did you tell me that it say? Yomo? What is it called? What did Rabbi Menashe Klein call it? The baby, the X-ray.
Sonogram and ultrasound.
And they're both the same. The ultrasound creates a sonogram.
Exactly.
So Baruch Hashem, we were right on with either word that we used. But okay, let's pick up tomorrow and let's pick up today. And here, fascinating comment by Ben Turin, who's sitting here. When we spoke about the cross, I want to add another story. About 10 years ago, I asked Shmuel Kamenetsky if there was a problem wearing a Patek Philippe watch, whatever that is, as the logo is a Calatrava cross, a stylist cross used by a Christian group from Spain. He told me there was no issue, and we shared a story to illustrate the point. Near the end of Rabban Cutler's life, Lakewood was building a new base medrash, now known as the Yashan. A large donor, Mr. Bentheim. You know who Mr. Bentheim was? That's Charlie Bentheim's father. This is Sigrid Bentheim. Charlie used to say about his mother that he had a number of boyfriends. His mother had a number of boyfriends, Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Menachem Kasha, and the Ponovitch Rav. So I understand already how he comes to Reb Aaron Cutler, and he evidently made a large donation, asked that his wife be given the honor of choosing the parochet. Turned out she chose a fabric which had crosses in it. They're probably like this, you're going back and forth. The bacharim, you know, the American kids, I learned in Lakewood, I'm the ear witness and eyewitness. I saw an American, I don't want to maledict him so many years later, I'm going back now 70 years, I saw an American kid go over to Reb Aaron. I wrote about him in the Silver Era. And he rebukes the Rosh Yeshiva for turning around right after Kedusha, not waiting for Takados, not waiting for the end of the Bracha. It's a Machlekes HaPaiskim, Rosh Yeshiva, Paskim, what he Paskim. He went up and he rebuked the Rosh Yeshiva, cited a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch to him, and we were watching. And the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, he knew who to answer and who not to answer. So the Bacham ran to Reb Aaron, and he paskened that it was fine and could be used for the Aron HaKodesh. Now, regarding the Chinese fast food place with the OK Kashrut and the scandal, so I was told originally it's near Lakewood. Now I have much more information. It's not that close to Lakewood. It's between Lakewood and East Brunswick. But it is true that people driving back and forth would stop off there. But it's Morty, too bad you weren't here yesterday. There was one of the top mashgichim of the OU, and he agreed with us that you can't give a heksha where meat is involved to someone who is not a tzaddik. I quote Norm Schloss, Rabbi Norm Schloss. He said you can have 100 mashgichim, not 3. There were 3 in this instance. If he wants to cheat in you, he can cheat in you. And that's exactly what your friend, the Mashkiach, told you, or your friend who had a geschäft on the Hashkacha.
Yeah, he put your story. He says, better trust me. I have all the Hashkachas you want. I'll do whatever you want.
And when I came in Aliyah 53 years ago, there was a bakery on Rehov Ben Hillel, the Rehov that connects Rabbi Itzkowitz High, the Rehov that connects Mordechai Ben Hillel, between Ben Yehuda and the King George. And there was a Hungarische bakery there. Everyone bought there. When the crazy Americans started coming in Aliyah, Yeshkan Hashgacha, and they look, Hashgacha, it was an insult to them to ask for Hashgacha. Later, for business reasons, they had to get a Badatz. But everyone, they knew, these people, you can be Samachan. Okay, one other drop of conversation, raising a problem that's come up again, and I want to repeat it just to make clear. I've said this many times over the last 50 years, but it doesn't catch evidently. As I told you, when I learned the Lakewood and the big Machloikis, Rebarin and the six Lubavitcher Rebbe of Shoshanoga Chetapara, I don't want to go into detail to take an hour and a half. It's not for now. But this was a tremendous machloket, which opens the whole question of whether you can interpret the Gemara in an allegoric fashion, in a midrashic fashion. You can take a halacha and shosh anokach atapara, the Yetzer Hara knocking over the Yetzer HaTov. You can turn it into a whole drasha, far fatkiyat ha-shefa. It came back to Lakewood that the sixth Rebbe gave a drasha and spoke in terms of Yetzer Hara, Yetzer HaTov. Rav Aaron called it apikorsis. And Layhud Maitar Rav Simcha, Lakewood's Sfatumot, it was, wow, the sixth Rebbe, such shtiyat. Lakewood went its way, Chabad went its way. The seventh Rebbe responded, and I cited this in class, that what's the Baron getting upset with the sixth Rebbe? He goes back to the generation of the Baal Shem Tov, among his Talmidim, where Talmidim who said the same vort, Shoshanoka Chetapara. And it leads itself, May Aimata Koran at the Shema Shel Kriyat Shel Avet, the start of Shas, new Aid, the first Mishnah in Bracha. What's Pshat? You give me Pshat, I wash your face in mud. That's Pshat? May Aimata, May Aimel Miyira Korim at the Shema Shel Avet. You follow? No, is that the pshat? All right, we'll leave it stand fire. Strilly, we'll leave it stand fire. Now, rumor has it, let me give the modern word, false news. We all know what false news is today. It's very frightening because the war, people, millions can be killed because of false news. We see what goes on in the world. So a story spread that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was very upset, Rav Shlomo Hyman of Teda Vadas was very upset, and they asked the Rav to write a rebuttal of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the story has it that the Rav wrote a rebuttal, published it under a different name, not Joseph Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. That article, that essay, has never, ever been found. We have hunted for it. My Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Seth Farber, who did his doctorate in Boston, about Maimonides, about the Rav, a Hebrew Jew, a wonderful doctorate, he hunted for it. Others hunted for it. Doesn't exist. I can prove to you it's a false story, very simply. All this took place, Rav Aaron reached America in 41. So it couldn't have taken place earlier than 41. Mori Rebbe became Rosh Yeshiva at YU in 41. 1942, the Rav gives the keynote address at the original banquet launching the Chabad Yeshiva in America. And it's a Meridic address. If anyone wants to see the heart of it, I refer you to a work by a guy named Rakefet. I don't have any other article that I know of that's been republished already. It's going to be republished again. It's the fifth time already. It's going to be republished. My Talmud is coming out. Rabbi Aaron Goldscheider, the editor of Torah Tidbits, is coming out with a magnificent volume on the Rav and the Rebbe and on Chumash. And he asked permission to republish the article. It was just republished by Jewish Press on the Yard site of the Rebbe. So there I describe, and the picture, if you don't want to believe today, we can prove it happened, the picture in Washington where Chabad didn't know who that speaker is. It's really an interesting story. There's the sixth Rebbe sitting there. There's Rav Shmaryu Guraye, the Chatan de Venesia, and whom many thought would be the seventh Rebbe. There's the seventh Rebbe speaker sitting there. There's the politician, the guest speaker, a Jew, helping Chabad get started. And there's a Rav sitting next to the guest speaker with a black beard, a young man, and no one knew who he was. I have to say, I want to recall my student, Rabbi Yosef Klausner, Zichrono Livracha. So Rabbi Klausner, whose mother was the secretary of the Var Hatzalah and had access to material from that generation, gave me a picture of the Rav. It was 1939, speaking at some convention. I published the picture in my work on the Rav. And Chabad, when my work on the Rav came out, they saw this picture, and someone said, wait a minute, this young bearded rabbi is familiar. And they took the picture of the Chabad dinner, matched it up, it's the Rav. But I have to say, Lekavod Chabad, they gave me the right to be the first one to publish the picture. They did not publish it until my work Washington came out 11 years ago. After I published it, and I tell you the story in Rosh Teivat, then they published it. Okay, so I'm caught up with everything. Let's pick up where we left off. The Six-Day War shook up the world, shook up every Jew alive who still had Jewish feeling. I need not tell you what the sights were like. I described what I saw with my own eyes. Satmar going up and down the trains, collecting for the Jewish agency for the war effort. As I told you last week, so much money came in that the Jewish agency could not write receipts. Ad kedei kach, people were given, didn't want the tax exemption. In my own community, in my own kehila in Maplewood, South Orange, Goyim knocked on my door and gave me $100 checks. So it shook everyone up. The Satmar, and it gave birth, if I'm sitting here, and many of you sitting here, you're only sitting here because of the Six-Day War. More than that, the whole Baal Tshuva movement, and remember, I venture a guess that the majority of Frum Jews in the world today are Baalei Tshuva, children of Baalei Tshuva, grandchildren of Baalei Tshuva. You take South Africa. South Africa is the biggest kehila outside of Israel of Shmirat Shabbat. It's over, they claim, 50% today. 90% or more are Baalei Tshuva. The head of the Chevra Kadisha in Johannesburg, when I was their guest, the scholar in residence, I was there a whole month, he told me they have a rule in the Chevra Kadisha, you can't be a member of the Chevra Kadisha unless you've been a Shomer Shabbos 10 years. So that tells you what, and this all happened, even Chabad, with all due respects, Chabad already had the concept of tshuva, why you was involved, why you had a whole program which was today taken over by the NCSY. But all this massive outreach, six-day war. It engendered unbelievable Torah feeling. Now, so the Rebbe responded, and he responded very strongly, the first one to publish, Al HaGula V'Al HaTemura. As I mentioned last week, the topic itself, the title of the book, is enticing, because Al HaGula, you think it's a redemption. Al HaTemura, it's phony. And it's a pasuk, you know, en route on King and Chalipin, the result of Nim B'Yisrael, the Kayim called them Al HaGula V'Al HaTemura, etc. All right. Then we get involved, and I got quite a few emails on this topic. We get involved with the Satan, with the Sitra Mavutha, and I stand on what I said last week. Again, I don't want to claim I'm an expert. If you ask me Shaila and Hilchat Agunot, I have no problem answering. There I know as much as anyone else in the world. But on Jewish philosophy, it's not exactly my expertise. But from what I understand, there's a basic problem here. There's the Satan, and there is a Satan in Sefer Yiyuv. Other places you can explain it as a euphemism. But in Sefer Yiyuv, the Satan talks with God, and he deals with Yiyuv, you see? Now, is he real? Does he have power? So, the basic philosophic thrust, particularly the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, and some of the Mefarshim, it's not that the Satan exists, but you don't want to attribute evil to God. And yet there is things in the world, tohu vohu, and negative creations which man is involved with, man perhaps is responsible. But instead of saying, God gave you free choice and God allows this, so we say the Satan. And this is the Gemara in Baba Batra that I quoted, that the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, and the Malach HaMavat are all one and the same. And what that indicates is that you don't want to say God is taking your soul, so we say the Malach HaMavat. But all this cannot happen without the Ratzon Hashem. The evil powers are part of God's creation. Does not act on its own like Christian theology. And that to me seems to be the basic thrust. I do have to admit that in Kabbalistic literature, you find more reference to the Satan or the Masfuta Acher, the backside of God, the black side of God. And at times you may even find the trend that the Satan can act on his own. He's not like a malach who can only do what God orders him. Now, and that's the academicians who study comparative religion, etc., you will find theories that this was influenced by Christian theology. All right, this takes us into the world of academia, and you'll see a lot of research has been done, articles have been written. But halacha lemaisa, you have the Satan, you have the Sitra Mavusa, you have the Satan dealing with Eov. Now, the Satma Rav takes the point of view that all that has happened is to challenge us to see how strong our faith is. Will we remain firm, or will we, chas v'chalila, acknowledge the Satan, the Sitra Mavusa, he calls it all the time, basically, or 90% of the time, and bow to the Sitra Mavusa. Beginning on page Yudchet, now I'm picking up new material, and I have to tell you, what I'm about to deal with now caused an atomic explosion in the world of contemporary Torah philosophy and theology. It begins on page Yudchet, and the Satma Rav says, what have the Zionists have accomplished? What has Herzl, the Avi Avot HaTum, refuses to mention his name and refers to him as the Avi Avot HaTum. I only wish I could show you my article already. It's ready. It's gone to press. My essay, But I can't do anything till the book appears, because I can't interfere with the sales. You follow? Because they tell me my essay is one of the main components of the volume In Memory of the Rav. It's the 30th Yahrzeit. It should be available. I hope by Hanukkah time. I hope by Hanukkah time. I'm only a victim. I'm not the publisher. So what did Zionism accomplish? Tell me, Jews lived in all the Arab countries. B'shalom b'shalva. Zionism, Herzl, you created hatred of the Jews. This is their accomplishment. When did an Arab kill a Jew? We lived among them, the golden age. We Rishonim, Gedolei Yisrael, the Rambam, the Ravid, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Rimigash, go on, it's an endless list, the Ran, golden age, who killed who? And along come the Zionists, and you want to take away their land. And this is part of the challenge. Will you believe this? Will you do it? Kill, murder, fight, wars. This is all a result of the Satan giving the Zionist victory. Six-Day War, Mitzvah Sinai, 48. Very powerful, quite a statement. Okay. This leads us to the issue that shook the contemporary world. The United States of America, we spoke about it yesterday. It was fascinating what came out afterwards from across the people in America listening. But what happened to me in 57, I was not unique. Here I submit an essay to win a $50 prize, and Dr. Regis says, what are you talking about, Americans? Not Jewish history, it's intermarriage, assimilation. Well, a miracle happened. We spoke in terms of Professor Tversky yesterday. I mean, I trust you heard this year, you'll hear it. A miracle happened in America, and you got to give all the credit in the world. Rabbi Revel, my cousin, the Mechitim, Reb Shimon Shkup, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, Reb Aaron Cutler, the Lubavitcher, the Satmar. Who would ever dream what America is today? That the New York Times has to write with awe what Torah Judaism has accomplished when everyone eulogized us as gone and forgotten. You cannot start to understand the world in which I grew up. As I mentioned yesterday, a big family. My family came 120 years to America. My wife's family, 170 years. Dafka, my wife's family, has hundreds of Frum Jews living in Israel today, direct descendants of their great-great-grandparents, etc. My grandson blows the shofar that my wife's grandfather blew. And he has three sons, a daughter, but the three boys already want to blow shofar. He told us the other day he won't let them touch the grandfather's inheritance, Malka's grandfather's shofar that he blew in East New York. He went out and bought three shofars for the boys. And we got an email yesterday with a little video of our great-grandchildren blowing shofar kanayin hara. I was zaycheh, you should know, I had great-grandchildren, same slichus already. So Baruch Hashem, all over Israel, Baruch Hashem. So my wife's family, dafka there. My family, what's left? Myself and my brothers. And, all right, we have many descendants, kanayin hara. But, wow, what America did. But the Rabbanim created a miracle. One of the figures that we devoted a whole year to talk about quite a few years ago already was Reb Yitzchak Kotner. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner is more or less a Johnny-come-lately. He was younger, and his life story is fascinating. Art Scroll, it's very fascinating. The two gedolim that Art Scroll can't issue biographies on are Rav Aaron Kuttner and Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Think what I'm saying, because they can't give you false information about them. Too much is known. Rav Aaron Kuttner, you'll have to deal with his youth, with his reading Russian literature, with his sister Malka. There's a lot there with Rav Aaron that Art Scroll will have a problem falsifying. With Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, it's a tremendous problem. Here's a man, a Slabodka Talmud, goes to Palestine, Talmud Muvhak admirer par excellence of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and so many years go by in America, and the famous story, he takes Rav Cook's picture off the wall in his sukkah, I believe it was, and the Satmar Rav, by the end of his life, Rav Kuttner's Muzman Ladin, remember we spoke about it, Rav Moshe Feinstein is Mazman him to Din Torah, he doesn't know, who's Rav Moshe? Comes a Satmar. All right, it's a fascinating story because I knew Rav Kuttner when I was in Bnei Akiva. Two-thirds of Bnei Akiva was Chaim Berlin boys, and they asked Rav Kuttner, I still remember, they asked him about mixed singing, because in Morasha and Bnei Akiva, we all sang Zmira together, and Rav Kuttner didn't want to paskin, he turned away. I just got an email, someone asked me, here's rumors, Rav Kuttner went to the opera in Berlin. I think Deutsch, Rav Shimon Deutsch, you got to look up his volume on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the pot in Berlin. I think he told me, that he found Rav Kuttner's yearly subscription to the Berlin Opera. All right, a lot of people went to the Berlin Opera, and I can tell you, Gedolei Yisrael went to the opera in Berlin. You can ask Rav David Miller, the famous story when he asked the Rav about going to the opera. The Rav says, what's the Shaila? And Rav David says, Kolisha. And the Rav says, and you know what Kolisha is? And the Rav walked away. He didn't give him an answer. You can ask Rav David. He's the ear witness to it. So you see Rav Kuttner. Now, Rav Kuttner gave a talk, I believe it was at an Agudat Yisrael convention. The talk was later written up in Jewish Observer. Jewish Observer for the Johnny Come Lately sitting here, but I don't think there are any Johnny Come Latelys. Jewish Observer was a fabulous monthly magazine. Came out 11 times a year, July, August together. The rest of the year, a fabulous magazine put out by Agudat Yisrael that I was given an honorary subscription to because of I got Agudat Yisrael involved in Russia, as you know, and to show their appreciation. I loved the magazine. I either loved the articles or suffered, but you enjoyed the challenge of reading them. Jewish Observer was put out of business, Hamodia, their whole English edition. It didn't stand a chance, Hamodia, or Daily, or Weekend Paper. All right, it wasn't on the same level, but ultimately, Nemishpacha, Ami Magazine, who needs a Jewish Observer? So it disappeared. It's all online. Every issue of Jewish Observer is available online, which is fabulous. Rav, this article was written up, and Rav Kuttner blamed the Holocaust on the Zionists. Word by word, you thought you were reading Satmar material. And Rav Kuttner, he says, Eidut Nemana, I met people in Jerusalem when I was there in the 1930s. They all got along with the Arabs. They were all friendly with the Arabs. We had wonderful relations with the Arabs. But once we rebel against them and demand the land as ours and climb the world, everything the Gemara in Ketuvot that we spoke about, this is the result, this is the punishment, this is the Holocaust. Well, I need not tell you Rav Kuttner's article caused a tremendous storm. The Satmarar by 19, I believe the article originally appeared 1977. You'll get all, I deal with this, Be'ezrat Hashem, what will be Rakafarar and Chelekei. This is already, also ready. It's a 165-page essay on this topic in published form. But I'm not ready to publish yet. I'm working on something now, a subjective memoir of Reb Shmuel Belkin. It's not pure scholarship, because here I can't write about Reb Shmuel as I wrote about my Rabbi Revel. I never knew Rabbi Revel was my cousin. My whole doctorate is worthless. I only discovered it 40 years later, as you know from the introduction to the fourth edition. So if I need a doctorate, I'll submit the Silver Era. Fine. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. But when I wrote the doctorate, I was totally impartial. I never met Rabbi Revel. I was 3 years old when he died. He actually died on my birthday. December 2nd is my birthday. He died December 2nd, 1940. All right, it's my cousin, and in our family, now that I traced it, we have genes of, we are mishugaim ledavar echad, our love of teaching Torah and to teach Torah. These are the genes I have. Rabbi Revel, the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron is my cousin. My nephew, the Rosh Yeshiva of Netzarim, Reb Hillel Rothkopf. Odem, he's not Rakefet, he's Odem, but we're both Rothkopf. And we have crazy genes. We're Mishugal Davar Echad, but Baruch Hashem, it's good for us, and I hope it's good for the Jewish people. So you see, this, when Rabbi Huttner published what he published, see, the Satmar, right, the Satmar we know, he's in a Dreitzach Harum in Sein Winkel, he's in a corner. Rabbi Huttner, Rosh Yeshiva, Chaim Berlin, it caused an atomic explosion. Who responded to him? Everyone responded, but who became very famous? His response was fabulous. Professor Rabbi Dr. Larry Kaplan, YU, I think his doctorate may be from Harvard, I don't know. The Rav loved him, by the way. He's the one who translated the Ish Halacha, and the Rav loved his translation. And he was very generous to me, because when I worked on my work on the Rav, I wanted to improve the English, meaning the Rav's third, fourth language before English was German. And if you know German, they write endless run-on sentences. So the Rav wrote the Ish Halacha. He evidently was thinking in terms of German philosophy, and the sentences, even though written in Hebrew, very difficult to translate. Run-on, run-on, run-on. So Larry did a fabulous job. But I asked permission if I polish it a little, and he gladly gave me permission. I thank him in the introduction to the Rav. Now, that's Larry Kaplan. I don't want to go any further. Rabbi Huttner's first cousin, who was my dear, devoted, wonderful neighbor. I miss him. He was older, but we bonded together like two brothers, an older brother and a kid brother. Rabbi Yoshua Huttner, in front of my eyes, he took Jewish Observer, threw it on the floor, stomped on it, maledicted it. He couldn't forgive his cousin. This is the Satmarav that we brought about the hatred of the Palestinians. Well, you got to read Larry Kaplan. He describes what went on over the generations and the difficulties and the enmity, and is the land ours or isn't the land ours, and the Mufti going to meet with Hitler's top leaders, and you can reach your own conclusion. But this is right here in the Satmar's writings. You caused the hatred. You forced the Arabs to kill Jewish people, Jewish boys. You are responsible. And now we talk about the Six-Day War, and the whole world is praising Tzahal. All that you accomplished by praising Tzva Hagana Yisrael is you elevate The individual who is the Avi Avot HaTumah refuses to mention his name, Herzl and Zionism. And I have to tell you, this is what I alluded to, and let me make it black and white. When we visited Israel for the first time in our lives, 1968, Malka and I and our two eldest daughters, it was an RCA tour. It was 1 year after the Six-Day War. Wherever you went, there were massive signs, Kol HaKavod LeTzahal. I remember, as if it happened yesterday, we're in Tel Aviv, and we're in the big department store. There were very few big department stores in Israel at the time, but there was one in the center of Tel Aviv. I forget what it was called. Big building, and a department store, and it had three floors and an escalator. You have to understand, all this didn't exist in 68. And we're waiting at the elevator, and a general walks out of the elevator with his aide-de-camp, a general, you can see the rank. Everyone salutes. It's like a Gadol b'Yisrael. Like I told you the story, we're standing up for the Rav. We saw the Rav entering the auditorium. We were way up front. The minute we saw him enter, we jumped up. Everyone saw that general. Everyone saluted. It's like a moment in time. And this was all over the world. Moshe Dayan, the eye patch. And he says, you go on praising, you go on saluting. All that you're doing is elevating the Sitra Acher. You are being challenged. Will you be a true believer, or will you bow before the idol of Zionism and give cover to the Avi Avot HaTumah? Now, on page 22, he brings us into a very interesting question that one has to know how to deal with it. I'll show you how it's real, even today. Gets us involved with Shabtai Tzvi. Gets us involved with the whole question. The Torah says, Acharei Rabim Lahatot. Well, if you're going to take the Torah literally, Acharei Rabim Lahatot, follow the majority. If you lived at the time of Shabtai Tzvi, Zev, you'd be running to Shabtai Tzvi. The majority of Jews, and he cites here, Carmel, Har Carmel. How many didn't bow to the idol? 300. The overwhelming majority, thousands bowed to the idol. You have to have the strength not to let the majority influence you. Now, I have to tell you, what he's touching upon here, I'm in full agreement with, not in relation to Zionism. But let me tell you a little story. I don't want to mention the name. That's covered for his sacrifice in life. But I'm upset with him. Pardon me for talking about myself. When I got that call in May of 1980, Harav Rakevet, Ata Muchan Lekabel Sicha, Beli Legalot Et Pratei Sicha, that call changed our lives. Malka and I were young and had strength. And it's hard for you to understand all that we did for 10 years until the Iron Curtain fell. It's not just that once a week I met with the branch of the Mossad in Tel Aviv that dealt with Russian Jewry. We had to keep the chain open. And like if I would meet someone like you, Elliot, at that time, Malka and I would start to think, how could we entice you and your wife to go to Russia? You understand? And it was not simple. I had the whole process. The Shin Bet had to do research on you. They could get back to me and tell me you can't go. You know why? Your son is in a sensitive position in the army. Once they got back to me, I think I told you the story. Someone, a rabbi, his wife, terrific people. He has a lawsuit against him. He's under arrest. He's being charged with extortion. Became a builder. Hasn't stood trial yet, but they were worried stiff. He's a security risk. Then you have to be briefed. It's not a simple process. And we devoted all this time. Now, one prison of Zion in particular, I had a sweet tooth for. Why? His cousin was one of my earliest students in the foreign student branch of Mechlala. They were cousins. Their grandfathers, one remained in Russia, and one got out and went to America in the 1920s. The granddaughter of the man who went to America, it's a tzaddikit until today. The one who remained in Russia, his grandson, was arrested three times. Three times sat in prison, three times in labor camp, for teaching Hebrew. There are pictures of me teaching him. They're famous pictures. Between the second to third arrest, he was not allowed to enter Moscow. My final day in Moscow, they said, Rebbe, we're taking you far away. You'll understand why when we reach there. And we traveled all the way on the outskirts. And in walks this famous prisoner of Zion. He was informed I'm giving a shiur, and he was so excited. All right, he finally gets out. Comes to Israel, the conservative movement, which has no scruples halachically, ethically, or morally, in my humble opinion, jumps on him and gives him money, a fellowship, a scholarship. He becomes a rabbi. All right, I meet him afterwards, Mechalel Shabbos, very embarrassing. I'm walking back from the Kotel and he's, forget it. So I say to him, what happened to you? He says, well, this is the majority of the Jewish people say this is the right way to live. And this argument, you know, when you meet people and you want to explain to them the blood in their veins, tell them, not always the majority right. This is not an election. It's not a democracy. And halacha is not up for a vote. Leit zarayiv leiv adam raminu rava. We're going to put to a vote the mikveh. Remember, we spoke about mikveh yesterday, a week ago. No, the majority of people who are Jewish will say, who needs a mikveh? We have baths and we have the beautiful facilities today. Who needs a mikveh? Going to put it to a vote. You can take kashrut. No, who died from eating pig? Trichinosis? I don't know. They'll say, we slaughtered a pig in the hospital. We cook it. We check it. This is what Torah is about. If you don't know how to surrender, if everything is you and your thinking, you have no God. You're the God. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But when you become the master, you decide right, wrong. So here the Satma Rav is absolutely right. Acharei Rabim Lahatar Zedin in Beitin HaGadol, in Beitin, when you're voting, when your Talmidei Chachamim is sitting and deciding, okay. But the masses, you know the expression, the masses at times can be no more than chamorim, jackasses. I don't have to give examples. And you can't mix up Kedusha V'Tara with electing people to clean up the cities and sweep the streets and build good highways and turn Givat Mordechai into one big traffic jam. Zelechud v'zelechud. And here he accuses the Six-Day War and the results of the Six-Day War It's all acharei rabim lahatan. They saw a victory. They don't analyze why satan, sidra masbuta, being challenged. No, the masses are yelling and shouting, kol hakavod letzahal. RCA is bringing a group from America, and when one young rabbi sees a general in the Israeli army, he's shaking with awe and admiration. All right. I never dreamt at that moment I'd have a son-in-law who would achieve quite a high rank. I have a grandson today, Tzva Keva, who is on it, Katzin Mitztayein. Wow. But it's the first time I saw... It's the second time I saw a general. The first time I saw a general was in the yeshiva, in the Rav's classroom, when Rav Gorin came in to give the shiur. And that's the first general I ever saw. And that was a sight that none of us will ever forget. American kids. And he comes in uniform, and he opens the Rambam in the middle of the shiur, and he holds the Rambam in place with the brim of his army hat. You follow me, Vic? The brim is on the Rambam, like my hand here. The hat is here. And we're sitting there, boy, was that. I don't know if Rav Gorin realized, but he created many Zionists in that classroom, and a good percentage came in Aliyah, and unfortunately, a good percentage are buried here from that very classroom. So, that's general. Or, are you crazy? This is what you're looking at. This is what you're worshiping. This is giving. Can I help you? You can. If you want to come in, come in. There's supposed to be a photographer who may be coming. I don't know. But maybe that's him. Okay. This is the Satmar's theory. This is his thinking. And this is where he says on page Chaf Hey, this is why I wrote this Kuntris, and this is why I called it Allah Gulav, Allah Tmurah. Don't mix up the real redemption that will come about because of God's will and Mashiach Tzidkenu to what's happened now, which is a pure result of the Sitra Acher. And finally, he ends off, I have to say, I can appreciate what he's saying. He says, the truth of the matter is, I want this to come out immediately. I want to hit the press and the public while everyone is still in a trance from the Six-Day War. But I can't do it. I don't have time. Remember, this is before his stroke. He's working around the clock. He's building Satmar in the United States. And he says, therefore, I'm going to depend upon my students and what they heard me say. I'll try to look at it and edit it, but I'm depending upon them to get this Kuntris out as fast as possible. Now, I want to tell you something. What he says here is absolutely true. Nothing equals what the master does himself. You want a proof? You've heard of Reb David Zvi Hoffman? Reb David Zvi Hoffman? Okay, Baruch Hashem. German Orthodoxy, head of Hildesheimer Seminary, going on dear. What he published in his lifetime? Fabulous. What the students publish from manuscript comes nowhere near. And I'll give you a live example. Anyone who studied Chumash and wants to deal with contemporary problems, so you have to deal with Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Vayikra and Devarim. Decades later, maybe it's the 70s, I was living here in Israel, I mean, I remember, Breshit and Shmot came out from Ktav Yad. Wasn't on the same level. I remember Rabbi Koopman saying, what a difference between what the master published and what the children published, the Talmidim published from the Ktav Yad. It's just not the master. Give you a similar example. Rav Moshe Feinstein B'chayav published, I believe, 5 volumes of Igrit Moshe. I may be wrong, maybe 6, but I believe it was 5. Then you had a 6th, a 7th, an 8th, a 9th, all came out from Kitvei Yad. Doesn't equal the original 5 volumes. Not only that, you'll have tshuvah in the other volumes, for instance, on girls learning Mishnah. Members of Reb Moshe's family told me he didn't write it, that someone else wrote it, and really Reb Moshe wouldn't agree with the more negative approach. But nothing equals what the master wanted to do. The same with all due respect to the Rav. Wa'ish halacha, the lonely man of faith, what he published b'chayav, what a level of writing, of scholarship, of harifut, bikiyut, etc. All right, the manuscripts are very nice, but had the Rav been there to do it, it would have been on a higher level. Of course, the factors of life are that you can't do it all. And I told you more than once, Rabbi, that there was a volume came out by Rabbi Rosenblum of Stern College. Remember I told you this? Rabbi Rosenblum wrote a volume on Rabbi Sintra Fulhir. She was his doctorate, I believe. He was head of Judaic studies at Stern College. I taught his daughter, very wonderful person, Zichrona Levracha. And I remember the whole world was waiting to see his work on Rav Hirsch, because they said, this is the first non-Hirschian who's written a volume on Rav Hirsch. And the volume comes out, this nice volume, and in it he criticizes Rav Hirsch. Why does he criticize him? Because Rav Hirsch had certain plans to write what was Chorev, to expand it and do a massive work on mitzvah. He never did it. On that, you're criticizing Rav Hirsch. He changed the whole world. He served German Orthodoxy. He built Beis Yaakov as a result of Rav Hirsch. English Orthodoxy is a result of Rav Hirsch. It could very well be that Yeshiva University, as much as they would like to deny it, is a result of Rav Hirsch. You understand what I'm saying? So you're right. The same thing with the Rav. Charlie, the Rav began a manuscript, was published. It was the introduction. It was going to do the philosophy of Judaism based upon the halacha. That you can imagine what a work that would have been. Reb Chaim's grandson, an Einiko, a gone idea, PhD Berlin, combining halacha, philosophy, contemporary life. Now you're going to criticize the Rav? He built Maimonides. He became the dominant figure in Yeshiva University until today. The Mechitz in America, what the Rav went through in his testimony, in his writing, you wouldn't have a modern Orthodox shul with the Mechitz today if not for the Rav. He said, you got to give all the credit. And I can tell you, Chovevei Torah, as left as they've gone, there's always a Mechitz. You take Israel, Shira Chadasha, all the feminists, the innovations, still a Mechitz. The woman lands in the middle, up front, but still a machitza. They won't take down the machitza. It's interesting. So I understand 100% of what the Sakhmidu is saying. Okay, now let us go further. You'll see these are all talks he gave, and the Talmidim wrote it up. I don't know whether the Sakhmidu went through it or didn't go through it, but there's no question he was the first volume to appear after the Six-Day War. Now, and he gets involved with the question of the Sitra Acher. Who gives him so much power? But you see, the Sitra Acher, whether we take a Kabbalistic approach, which gives him more power, or the way I interpreted the Gemara in Baba Batra and the Gemara Nevuchim, you see that what he did to Eev, God at times allows him to act very stridently. And with Eev, It's the famous Gemara also in Baba Batra, the same sugya, that God says to the Sitra Acher, beat the hell out of Eve, but don't kill him. So he says that when it comes to the Sitra Acher, he has tremendous power, but let the Jewish people survive. And even with the Six-Day War, that he could do so much, but we didn't want hundreds of thousands of Jews killed. And I have to say, the Satmar here is very powerful, because if you remember the period before the Six-Day War, areas were set aside in the big cities from the north to the south for temporary burial. They were chayshish that there would be thousands upon thousands of civilian and military casualties. And we had a miracle, B'sach HaKol, all right, well over 100 were killed in battle, but compared to what they thought, it was a miracle. And this too, the Satmar attributes, yeah, the Sitra Mavusa had the authority to torture, to challenge, to see if you're real or bound to Zionism, but like Eve, don't kill them entirely. Let them survive. And here he tells a story with the Shabtai Tzvi. Tells a story, and he gives you a source where it's written up, Sheraton Shuat Kalach Shah, who's the Kalach Shah, lived at the time of the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov considered him one of the greatest Gedolim of the generation, and the Kalach Shah is debating with Jacob Frank. Now, Jacob Frank, if you study Gershon Shalom, if you recognize the name, Gershon Shalom, who I yet met when I came to Israel in 69, when I came in Aliyah, I actually met him, spoke with him. It's fascinating. A German who came from basically an assimilated background and became a Zionist and a great expert in Kabbalah. He's considered today, there's so much study being done at the various universities and academia, Kabbalah. He's considered the grandfather of all the people who are in Kabbalah. And I met him at a wedding. We were davening mincha, and I looked at him. I don't think he knew how to answer Kedusha. I looked at him. Maybe I was wrong. I mean, he wasn't from, but ad kedei kach, and to be such a great expert. Now, what I'm about to tell you, again, I have to caution you, there's no black and white here. Is there such a thing as Kabbalah? All right. This whole esoteric part of Judaism. So this, I quote to you, Professor Shaul Liebman. Professor Shaul Liebman, who, you know, was a first cousin to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish, he once wrote to the Chazon Ish asking if there's a source like this. The Chazon Ish writes, you're asking me, you're the biggest bucky in the world. And it could be true that Professor Liebman may have been the biggest bucky of his generation. But he was more than that. His greatness was that he knew Greek and Latin, and what he did for the Yerushalmi, what he did for Medrash. Again, he didn't finish everything that he started. He only lived one life. But anything that he wrote is on the highest level. Today already, in all the yeshiva, they take in his Tosefta, and people refer to it. You have to separate the man from where he taught. He taught at the seminary, but you have to know he always was from, remained from, was not happy at the seminary when they tried to innovate. And Kol Zman he was alive, they couldn't change the seminary. The younger crowd said, "My Mataya Mutu Oto Skenim," the Medrash on Bnei Aharon. And the minute Shaul Liebman died, that's the end of halacha, the end of the seminary as a halachic institution, women rabbis, etc., etc. Now, Shaul Liebman would never, he considered Professor Heschel an Amoritz. He said, all Heschel knows is Medrash, Agada. The Kabbalistic said, we spoke about him, the other day, Avram Yeshua Heschel, he once said, all this is Bubba Mises, but the history of Bubba Mises is academia. It's a very deep thought. In other words, he didn't believe in the Kabbalah and influencing our thinking and influencing halacha, shas and paiskim. But the history of what he considered non-essential, that already becomes academia. That was Professor Gliebman's approach. So I'm going to cite a source now, and you're going to say to yourself, could this have happened? Could this have been? Agree with Professor Lieberman. But the fact that the Satmar Rav can use this to illustrate his enmity towards Zionism, that is legitimate. And what's the story is unbelievable. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the Frankists. Abe, do you know anything about Yaakov Frank? See, the Shabtai Tzvi movement gave birth to offshoots. The Frankist was the biggest offshoot. It was in Poland, and this was after Shabtai Tzvi imploded. And Jacob Frank headed it up, and I hate to tell you, when you mati rishurim, you get a big crowd, okay? He was mati all types of rishurim, sexually, Shabbos, unbelievable. Ultimately, they wound up in the Catholic Church. The Christians, he was a threat to everyone, because here's a man that's preaching religion, and they're doing every sin under the sun. Okay. So now, the Satmar Rav quotes the following story from the Koach Shah Shelet Mitzvot Siman Lamed Aleph. And he says, one time the Koach Shah debated with Frank, Yimach Shmo, Rosh Shel Kat Shabtai Tzvi Shem Rishom Yirkav B'yamav. And he asked Yaakov Frank, how do you have the chutzpah, the gall, to abolish the Torah with Chilul Shabbos and other sins that we heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu say at Mount Sinai, B'pi HaGvurah V'kol Yisrael Shamu V'ra'u, and you abolished it? And that Russia turned to him and said, Kol HaTorah Nitna Rak Achazman Biach Shabtai Tzvi V'talmido, and may Oz V'hala Torah Chadasha Yatsa Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow. And the Koach Shah looks at him, and Shabtai Tzvi says, how do you know that the Torah is legitimate? Because your parents told you. And you're telling me it's legitimate because father passes it on to son and father to son. The Rishonim say this, but this is what you say? I will bring your mother and father back from the other world to tell you that it's all abolished. And the Rav looks at Shabtai Tzvi, and he says, The Rav looks at Jacob Frank, the Talmud of Shabtai Tzvi, and says, fine, I challenge you to bring my parents back to here. Kraltam, Bavakasha, V'yavo, V'nireh. And Frank HaRusha says something with his lips, and suddenly two figures appear that look like his father and mother. And he looks at them, and he says, yeah, this looks real. And his parents say to him, Bini da, ki Torat Moshe netuna rak ad biyap shapsai tzvi. Umiyaz vahala, butela, v'rak b'shapsai tzvi v'siyato tamin, ki zehu Mashiach Hashem. Could you imagine this feeling? You're standing there, you're debating with Jacob Frank, he brings back two ghosts that look like your mother and father, and they're telling you that Torah is abolished. All right? The Rav says, Torah is abolished? Fine. What does the Torah say? You should respect your mother and father. You're not allowed to hit your mother or father. Torah is abolished, I can hit them. And he slams his mother and father standing in front of them. They fall to the ground. Everything shrinks. And it turns out they were really two dead dogs. And this is V'ra'u kulam v'hikiru, everyone standing around. Ki heiman nevelat mishnei klavim hamesim. And the people who stood around declared Moshe emet v'torato emet. You see the analogy? All this Zionism, all that we see, all the miracles, all that's happened, it's no more than falsehood. Nevelat, treifat, klavim, not your mother and father. And this is the Satmar's viewpoint. The Sitra Masvusta has this power. You see great miracles that appear to you to be great miracles. In reality, it's no more than nevelat, and you're being tested. Do you remain a proper Jew, or do you fall by the wayside? All right, you have to admit that's a very powerful passage. You can understand how Professor Lieberman would be hysterical if you quoted the story and gave it credence, okay? And you could just picture the Professor Lieberman and Professor Heschel dealing with this in front of students. It would not be an event where they would both agree, we'll put it that way. And I have to tell you in parentheses, the seminary, you know, again, it's very hard for you to understand it today. But in my time growing up, the seminary had a lot of frum people. And you talk about Professor Liebman's outstanding Talmud, Rabbi Dov Slotnick. Slotnick was a tzaddik. I mean, I knew him intimately for many years till he died. Wow, he knew all the Mishnah by heart. All Shishay Sidrei Mishnah he knew by heart. Dov Slotnick. And Dov Slotnick, he's the one, remember I told you? He gave a talk at the seminary to the students on Taret Mishpacha. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe sent for him and gave him a big yasher kayach. When he asked the Rebbe, should he leave the seminary? So the Rebbe said to him, Kol zman, as Professor Liebman bleibt, du sollst bleiben eichet. As long as Professor Liebman is there, you have to remain there as well. That's the seminary when I was growing up. And I can tell you something else. We never called it the seminary. Does anyone know what it was called? Does anyone remember? Schechter's. It was always called Schechter. Solomon Schechter was the main figure who built it and put it on the map. And everyone referred to it as Schechter's. And halacha l'maisa, I think you know, until 1950s why you provided half the students of the seminary, or half their incoming classes, half the students were graduates of Yeshiva College. They went to the seminary, some remained frum, some became conservative rabbis in the full sense of the word. But it had a tremendous, tremendous attraction, a tremendous pull. And, you know, students who had studied in yeshiva for 16 years, elementary, high school, college, they wanted to see the academia. And this is what I lectured on maybe 10 years ago already, maybe more. If not for Mordechai Kaplan, the yeshiva and the seminary would have combined, would have merged in the late 1920s. Once the yeshiva announced its plan to a $5 million goal to build a whole new campus, where you're going to get so much money, where you're going to get so many people to come to study, merge, and the Balabatim money, it'll be less money, we can do it together. The Balabatim 100% in favor. And they would have solved the problem of the faculties until the end of college. It would have remained entirely a yeshivatic approach. Graduate school, smicha, they would have had both approaches, yeshiva and an academic approach, a scientific Jewish scholarship. And it would have been fabulous. It would have been an institution that who knows how big it could have become, and they wouldn't have to build graduate schools, just a yeshiva with a college, with a high school, nothing beyond it. But the problem was Mordechai Kaplan. No one knew what to do. How do you handle Mordechai Kaplan? Mordechai Kaplan is a story unto itself. Excuse me.
Forgive me. I'd like you to just turn more this way for me, please.
Whatever you want, whatever.
Just this way I can get you more in profile and see a little bit.
Whatever you want, back. Whatever you want.
I also need to move the computer. Forgive me, everyone.
What do you have to move?
Photo day today. I need to move the computer closer to you, okay, just so that I have it more in the frame. Hi, everybody. Oops, sorry.
Yomo. Watch what he's doing, that it's okay.
May I do that? Just move it more here, please. Okay?
Please.
Thank you so much. And, yeah.
Were you my student by any chance?
It's very possible.
BMT? Did you go to BMT?
I went to YU, but not to BMT.
Ah, so no, YU.
It's a pleasure being here.
YU,
Israel for 20 years.
In YU, you'd have to have me in the 60s. You don't look old enough.
Okay.
My students from the 60s are older than I am.
Okay. just keep that flat. That's good. So, Rabbi, you'll be directing your attention to the left here.
Okay.
Okay, this way from my angle, I can see.
To Struli and Zeb. Okay, got it.
And if I can get a few more of the gentlemen sitting, just filling up this front row, it'll give the impression
Ben,
that the room is full.
Vic.
You can just come right up here, please. This way. And you're good right there, sir. And I would say that you can stay there, but if you I need one more person in that seat over there, to from this angle to give the impression, and these two seats, not this one, please. These two seats. If someone could just please, you'll be soft and out of focus in the background. We won't be featured on the cover of the next YU magazine. Don't worry. Okay.
Morty, yeah. Come up.
Those two seats, right where our tech guy is, would be great. And this one here, please. Be doing me a tremendous taiva if you could just fill this in here. Okay? Great. Those two, perfect. And just this one here, and we're ready to go.
Okay.
I'm going to also move this, Rabbi. I'm going to tidy up a little bit. Part of my... Okay? We'll just...
Fine.
Okay,
fine.
Good. Forgive me for being so proactive here. And we'll... just want to get the job done. Okay. Great. Okay. Here. Okay. He's that as a prop for him. Okay. All right. Here we go.
Okay.
Action.
Okay.
But you're basically teaching that gentleman over there.
Okay. No.
Okay.
My pleasure.
Great.
Okay. So we go a step further now, and he quotes the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, What happened with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? He turned to Vespasian and he asked him, save Yavne, and he made some other small requests. And Vespasian saved Yavne, saved Rabbi Gamliel, gave in to him. On the other hand, he killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews. So tell me, are we going to praise Vespasian? He saved a few Jews. Look what he did. Look at the total picture. And here, the Safmarav comes into his own life. The Holocaust. Sit up a little bit. I'm 85. Here we come into his own life. Vespasian, the Holocaust, the Zionist saved a few Jews. Admit it. But look how many they killed. They aggravated Hitler. They made Hitler resolves to kill the Jewish people who have declared a boycott against him. So they saved a few Jews. They're like Vespasian. Do you praise Vespasian, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro? Would you praise the Zionists? They saved a few Jews, but look how many they killed. And here, he refers to his own salvation. He talks about Kastner. He refers to the trial in Israel. Now, we've spoken about this many times, and the picture is very mixed. How do we rate Kastner? Was he a wonderful Jew who did his best to save Jews? Or did he save his own family and a number of others by chance? In reality, he helped the Nazis apply the final solution to Hungary. How do we rate Kastner? And here I have to tell you, after our lectures, a Talmud, if you recall our lectures on the Rebbetzin, what did her brother Binyamin say? They were saved by Kastner. He called Kastner a tzaddik yesod olam. And this is the problem. How do you view Kastner? He did the best he could under very difficult circumstances. What would we have done? What would we have accomplished? Why do we criticize him? Here's someone he saved, a prominent family, the Jungreis family, Esther Jungreis's kid brother, my friend from Bnei Akiva. Well, I should say, I think, he was an older brother, excuse me. The kid brother died already. He was an older brother. And Kastner saved them. Kastner had no need to save them. And they were put on in the middle of the transport of the train when it stopped at Bergen-Belsen. And because Kastner saved the Jungreis family, there must be thousands upon thousands of more Torah Jews in the world today. So how do you view Kastner? The Safmarav, whose life was saved by Kastner, a very negative point of view. And this is exactly comparing it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He saved a few. He killed so many. How do we view him? And the attitude of the Safmarav, absolutely negative. And this will explain something else to you. Safmarav was asked more than once, how can you be so anti-Zionist? Wer hat euch gerettet? Who saved your life? And the Satmarov, instead of answering Kastner, the train, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, the Eibishter, the Eibishter. All right, that's the Satmarov's answer. Does everyone accept it? Very difficult to accept. Because just as the Eibishter has shlichim who do bad, he has shlichim who do good. And you have to give Kastner credit. And I have to tell you, until today, the question is raised, who was he? What was he? Don't judge by his granddaughter. If I'm going to judge by Michal Michaeli, I'm going to say very harsh words. His granddaughter was raised here in Israel. She doesn't know what an Aleph is and what a Bet is. She's never learned the Pasuk Kumish in her life. She worships an idol. The idol's name is Michal Michaeli. The paramour that she lives with, because, you know, she won't marry on principle, but I do have to give her credit. She does not play around. He does not play around. She's a concubine. Let's call it by the halachic name. She's a concubine in the full sense of the word. And she was raised here. Kastner was a product of Hungary, a product of the assimilation there, but also strong Jewish roots. You all know that his mother, I believe, or he had a dream, and his mother appeared to him in the dream and told him to save the Satmaruv. So it shows there's some connection. Whenever anyone asks me about Kastner, I will always tell them, 50-50, you can't judge the man. If I was sitting in the court that dealt with the Kastner case, I would have found him innocent, period. Okay? He paid a heavy price. He was assassinated soon afterwards. The people who assassinated him went to jail, but for a very short time. They were pardoned and released. All right? And this issue haunts us. But here's the Satmarov. Here's his opinion. And I can understand him from his point of view. If he's really convinced there's a Sitra Mavusa and there's a Satan and God is testing us, so from his point of view, a few were saved. Look how many were killed. Don't thank the Zionists. What did they accomplish? And the same thing with the Six-Day War. What are you getting all excited about? Okay, thank God they saved a few Jews. They saved, but many died, and look at the anti-Israel feeling it has established. Gabe, one second. Thank you very, very much. You enabled me, Shama B'Zacha B'Dibur Echad Namru, to accomplish both. What's the name of the wonderful photographer?
Eugene Weisberg.
Eugene, a pleasure. And when you have time, you're welcome to come to Shir in person, not just pick it up on Zoom or YU Torah.
Appreciate that.
The live expression for the Rebbe and for the Talmidim is on a higher level in person.
Our job to get your word out to the world.
Thank you. Gam lechem tiva v'chatim v'tova. Regards home, Gabba. Regards home. I just spoke with Asher. He travels all over the world. The kid didn't want to learn English. Because he speaks English, his boss always has to take him to interpret for him. Do you follow? It's my grandson. They live in the same yeshiv. Okay, back here. And let me go one step further. We'll end off with this, but it's powerful too. The Satmarov suffered greatly from the point of view of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And here you have to understand, and I've told this, you know, many people try to show up the Lubavitcher Rebbe by quoting he's an anti-Zionist, he hasn't seen Hatikva. Again, restate what I stated over the decades. The Lubavitch movement was just as anti-Zionist as Satmar. When the movement began, the Zionist movement, and Herzl caught on, Zionist Congress, the Gedolei Yisrael came out with Svarim 100% maledicting the Zionist movement. And the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe was among those who wrote and maledicted. But life moved on. And Lubavitcher had to interact with a new reality. And already, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe was not so anti-Zionist by the 1910s, the 1920s, the 30s. The seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, in my humble opinion, is the greatest Zionist we had in the 20th century. You can argue with me from today to tomorrow, and people argue, but what he accomplished, and I'm happy to see, remember I quoted to you, great religious Zionist leaders, who I didn't know this till afterwards, people sent me their talks, where it's like Rakefer is speaking. Yes, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he may not sing Atikva, the greatest Zionist we have, what he's done for the State of Israel, people he sent, what he's built here, etc., all over the world. I don't have to reveal secrets, but Chabad Shluchim work hand in hand with the Mossad. And I can tell you that my own son-in-law, when he left the army, he went into another career in security, but another part of security. It involves a lot of travel. Whenever he traveled, he would contact the local Israeli ambassador. Where do I have kosher? Where do I have Shabbos? And time and again, they would send him to Chabad. And more than that, the hotels that Israelis stayed at were secured by the Mossad. And they were always within a short walk of where Chabad had its Chabad house, its center. So you see, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Satmar Rebbe, you're talking about two extremes. This is not a middle road. So when the Six-Day War took place, people from the Chabad, and this becomes much more tangible within Tebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was reported to have said that how can you not praise the Almighty for the nace of the Six-Day War when people who were saved, who were on the firing line, the miracles that happened, if they come back to that area, they have to say, Shasali Neis B'Makom Hazeh, have to make a bracha. And the Satmar Rav was hysterical. And here he quotes, and this is a very fascinating volume written by the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer wrote a autobiography to a certain extent in 1812, Napoleon, the war, the siege on Pressburg. He couldn't stop writing. So when he was under siege and he couldn't say Shayurim, couldn't meet with Talmidim, the siege on Pressburg, he wrote what happened. And he describes the nace that they were worried stiff, they would be conquered, and God was kind to them. And after the siege, he writes, they started shooting. He has to refer to Napoleon. They're shooting at the city. Hayapaka du bahalagadola vishakanat suma. Vahayu kluim biskurim bebayetz manorach aruch ki haya sakana latzeit hachutza. And afterwards, the war ended, everything became quiet, and Jews were saved. And he starts preaching. God saved us for one reason, to do tshuva. God was kind to us to show us his strength. But now the way you prayed to be saved, tshuva elai, v'taktimu tfila l'tzara. Now you prayed, you didn't want to have the tzara. V'davarim ha'ela orarati az l'tshuva. God will abolish the gezeira. You will be saved. But do tshuva, and the Satmar Rav quoting the Chatam Sofer, what are you getting so excited about? The Six-Day War. What are you talking about? Bracha, the Shas Lishim. Jews were killed. All right, many Jews were saved. But if God saved you, He saved you for one reason, to do tshuva. And here's the Satmar Rav, quite powerful. And you can hear in an undertone that he's differing with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We're going to come to it where it's much more open, where he doesn't refer to the Lubavitcher by name, but it refers to a Hasidic Rebbe, etc., that anyone who knows the period knows for sure it's the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So let me reiterate, there's no question that the Satmar Rav gives tremendous power to the Sitra Masvuta, which we can call the dark side of God, the backside of God. He's done miracles for us, but those miracles are just to challenge us. Will we fall by the wayside? Will we add covered to the Avi Avot HaTuma? Or will we do tshuva and come back b'lev v'nefesh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why praise the Zionists? They caused all these problems. Who had a problem with the Arabs before Zionism? Who had a problem in Yerushalayim? You'll see, that's what the Putna writes about. I live in Yerushalayim, the Arabs and the Jews got along so well, he describes. You have to see Kaplan's response to him. But leave that for when my work comes out, you'll see it in detail with all the sources. But here's the Satmar Rav, quotes the Chatam Sofer, and he's not budging. He will not accept what happened. And even his own salvation, Kastner, the Mishpat, HaMishpat, HaMefor Sam HaKu, will not give Kastner any credit. They killed so many. All right, they saved a few. No different than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Vespasian. But he will not give Kastner credit. And just think what Binyamin said when asked, how do you deal with Kastner? He said, Tzadik Yisod Olam. And he's a young guy. He's a Chaim Berlin graduate. Maybe a Chaim Berlin Musmach. He didn't go to YU. His brother wound up in YU. But he was a Chaim Berlin boy. And you say, Yirat Tzadik, always involved in Habatzat the Torah, the rabbinate. Calls him a Tzadik Yisod Olam. All right, it's food for thought. I don't think, Charlie, we can reach a conclusion. But I get upset when people maledict Kastner. You understand? When you're in these positions and have to make a decision, life and death. I write about this in Washington. Tzvi Groner, Groner Zecher Tzadik Levracha, said to me, Ani, why do you pick Essas? I saved Essas. I'm not a schut. How many people do you know of Pidgin Shvuim? My wife and myself, certified by the Mossad. The head of our division said to me, I'll never forget it, Erev Shabbos Kodesh Pasha told us, 1985, he said, Harav Kefet, anachnu matzdiim lecha. And he was not a guy to give compliments, take my word for it. And he couldn't believe it, I achieved it. I couldn't believe it either, and I had to call Rav, yeah, it's a whole story. I'll tell you the whole story, I'll cry like a baby, because the operator asks me after the call, because he was listening, I'm talking to Essas, the operator on this side, the operator in Russia, and the KGB is listening, and the Mossad is listening, you understand? One little phone call, and six people are listening. And I know this as a fact, because once I got a call from Leningrad, I just read a book just came out that I reviewed. Let's see when it comes out in Jewish Action. I'll talk about it in class because I want to give you the Torah Shabbat path. And I get a phone call from Leningrad. Lane is arrested. They shout into the phone before they can be cut off. And I'm working hard to find my the head of my division. I'm trying calling, smalling. 2 hours later, I reach him. And Aryeh Krell says to me, "Harav Rakefet, anachnu kvar yodim kvar. Ma ata chosev shelo shomim et hasicha shelcha?" Then I once walked in. And he said, Aryeh Krell said, and he throws a letter at me. Any letter you wrote to Russia, they opened it, photographed it, and sent it on. And he shows me the letter. One of the people that came out from the Moscow crowd, and he's writing to Russia. He says, it's just like Russia here. You work under the table. As long as you don't report your income, you can do okay here, just like Russia. And I said, this was Aryeh Krell. The memories come back. But halacha lemaisa, these are difficult decisions. And maybe I'm being too generous, but I would never fault Kastner. I would say I don't envy the position he was in. Okay, are there any questions? I never had a crowd like this since Corona began. Hatov, if the shi was any good, then it's tov now, and hametiv when it's on yutorah.org. Yes, Ben.
When you were reading about Kastner, you said he speaks about him very negatively, so you said about the Vespasian analogy. Does he speak specifically about Kastner, or just it's just so?
No, he talks about Kastner. First time on Mishpat Ahu.
The person who was judged, and that's
that's Mishpat. He's referring to Kastner. Again, he doesn't mention Kastner then, like he doesn't mention Herzl by name. These are code names, like you would say the judge. The judge hit two homers last night. Are you aware of it? He's at, what's he at now, 59? Help me out, 59 home runs? Wow, he's ahead of Hank Greenberg. I think Hank Greenberg's best year was 58. You don't know what I've discovered. Remind me, I got to get it together. I'll tell you next week. Talmud sent me something. I'm walking on there. Hank Greenberg, back in my life. Okay. Check out, Judge. Let me know. It's like the judge, the Yankee Clipper. Everyone knows who you stand the man, usual, okay? Everyone knows who you're talking about.
You're talking about
Hank, you know what they call Hank Greenberg? Hankish Pankish.
You were talking about opera earlier. I believe the expression, "the fat lady hasn't sung yet," originated from the opera because a heavy-set woman has a very good voice.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of the opera, she would sing. So maybe they took it to baseball.
Could be. I don't know if I have to admit I'm not an opera fan. I do have a very good friend, Yilhad Sadik. 59 home runs. He's one ahead of Hank Greenberg, 58. And Charlie Babe Ruth, 60, and Roger Maris, 61. 61 and 61, and all that without drugs. Anything that comes afterwards is all drugs. You can't give them credit. Okay, Yomo, I want to thank you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart and tuning in again on health and happiness. Das Vedan, you open it to the world. We got to get out of here. It's another class. Can you open it to the world? Okay. Oh yeah, we don't have class. First of all, I want to tell everyone there's no classes next week. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah. We pick up before Yom Kippur, a normal week, and then we don't have classes till after Sukkot. Okay, that's the way the Kola works. Are there any questions from around the world? Okay, so I want to thank you very much. By the way, Jack, Rabbi Lessin's name, I believe it's spelled L-E-S-I-N. It could be two S's. Check it out in Washington, how I spell his name. And that's the way it has to be spelled.
Your grandchildren spelled with one S.
One S. Then I thought it was one S. But check Washington. Washington, I took it off his dictionary, off my smicha from him. which is on his stationery. Rabbi Lessin is spelled here L-E-S-S-I-N, but check it out in Washington, because we now have Yomo showing me the internet and a live report from Ben Turing. Until we meet again, and thank you so much for being with me today and staying up all night in the States. Until we meet again. Oh, not all night. You went from Slichus to Rakefet. All right, I hope it'll help with Tshuva, as the Satmar Rav said, whether we agree or disagree, but when God does us a miracle, we should do Tshuva. Until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. What are you showing me? Harava Gaon Rav Moshe Nozis also. That's the worst book ever published. That pamphlet has 1,000 mistakes, not 100 mistakes. It doesn't prove anything yet.
I keep forgetting to ask the Rebbe. Does the Rebbe remember when he was teaching in TA and a student, Jeffrey Sava?
Sava?
S-A-V-A. Jeffrey Sava?
S-A-V-A. V-A. Yes.
Stationary.
Wait a second. In his stationery, it's one S. Jack, you don't have to look anywhere. Here it is. L-E-V-I. N, like the L-E-S-I-N. Yes, I did have a student, Saba.
That's Donna's brother.
Who's his brother?
That was Donna's brother.
Wow, so no wonder your family has to get Baruch Hashem.
No, we were in Florida. He mentioned the Rebbe's name. That was my Rebbe.
One second. Does he look back with happiness that good Rebbe? Or I had that Rebbe ruined me.
Tell you then that was, he's a year under, that was 68, 64, I don't know, it's the early 60s, 61, 62, 63, I don't know exactly which year.
S-A-V-A, and first name?
Jeffrey.
How old is he?
He's now
74. So according to that, I started teaching in YU in 62. So make the cheshbon, he had to be about 14 years old.
Yeah, he was for 4 years in MTA.
MTA. So make the cheshbon. Wow. Jack. What? Jack's coming?
Yeah. In May. He made it May.
Oh, I'm
the Rebbe wrote in the book of Lesson of One.
And here he spoke it to Elias. Okay. Wow.
So you
can end it, yeah.
Okay.
Bruchim to you. Thank you.